Today I want to talk about how to heal your foot when you have a rock in your shoe. Everybody knows that the path of life is easier to navigate or to walk on when you don't have a rock in your shoe. That's pretty much a no-brainer. So what do you do when you do have a rock in your shoe? The first thing you're going to want to do is get more information about the rock. Take your shoe off, examine it, take out the rock. Sometimes the rock isn't actually a rock, but a bump inside the shoe itself, maybe in the construction. Maybe it's something to do with your sock or the stocking that you're wearing. But if there is a rock in your shoe, remove it. That's the main answer. You may be wondering, this is going to be a very short talk this Sunday, or is it going in another direction? And the answer is, it's going in another direction. I recommend to clients that when they are talking about unhappiness in their lives, that they should examine the physical level of their lives first. Let's examine physicality. If there's some simple physical object that is an irritant to them, that is producing or contributing to a physical condition, that should be dealt with first. In other words, if there is a rock, check it and see if removal is the key. I could say that there are two different ways of handling a problem. Subtract something or add something. In the traditional Western medical model, this approach would be to remove body parts, add chemicals, or add artificial body parts, or most profitably, do all three. When we consider chiropractic and other specialties, we can include the idea of adjusting or correcting something as a practice. This is a nice, effective, non-invasive alternative to the other approaches that I just mentioned. If I expand the concept of the physical rock by making it a metaphor, we can view the entire physical body from head to toe or from toe to head to determine if there is a physical object that is disturbing our energy. Chronologically, after the gestation period, that is before we're born, when we're developing in utero, the birth process is where rocks are either created or not corrected. There is a chiropractic technique referred to as cranial release that I'm a fan of. And it was at a demonstration of cranial release a few years back that I got an explanation of full blowout. And so the instructor explained it, and I liked this idea. When a baby is being born normally is a head-first vaginal birth, that baby's head is being compressed by the muscles of the mother's body because it is a relatively small space compared to the size of the baby's head. So a lot of pressure is being put on that baby's head as it is making its way through the birth canal. As its head emerges from the body, the pressure is released and full blowout. That is, the head expands past normal size, the bones in the skull, which may have been compressed so they're overlapping, now expand outward, align alongside of one another in a normal position, and the head settles back to normal. It's an important point in a healthy birth. People who are born by cesarean sections don't experience this process of full blowout. Interestingly enough, and disturbingly so too, over the course of some years now, when clients have mentioned seizures in their children or in themselves, and I question the type of birth that they experienced, either them or the children, C-sections tend to be the standard reply. Seizures, misemotion, allergies, and a variety of other growth interfering characteristics seem to be part of the life of a person who has not experienced full blowout upon being born. And so you can just imagine if we can correct symptoms by having cranial release, that is, adjusting this rock, improving vision, emotions, allergies, pain goes away, physical mobility or coordination, facial features even, and structural balance in the body can all be improved. You say, let's deal with the physicality here. So if you've had a C-section birth, or your children have, you're going to want to take this into consideration. If you had any head injury, that is, bumps and lumps to your head, and who hasn't, you might want to check this out to see if there's any misalignment of the bones in the skull. A lot of people believe that after a certain age, those bones are fixed. It's like a helmet that a football player would wear. But the medical authorities have, and scientists doing research into this area, now recognize that those bones are never fixed. There's always mobility. Mobility means they could be mispositioned. So if there's mispositioning, if there's a rock in your shoe relative to this area of the skull, you're going to want to take a look at cranialrelease.com. This is not cranial sacral therapy. That's a different thing entirely. I've done them both, and I would say the speed of results that come from cranial release are very impressive. We're talking 3 or 4 minutes, and you will notice a difference. An area almost completely overlooked as an area of danger or of rocks is in the area of the mouth. The teeth, the gums, and bones in the jaw have been proven for over 100 years to be the sources of deadly infections and inflammation, yet this is undervalued in current Western medical care. Over 100 years ago, Dr. Weston Price, who was a dentist and a dental researcher, proved, and he had a large research staff working with him, that root canals were a deadly device in the mouths of patients. He did extensive research into this area, and his authoritative studies were suppressed by the American Dental Association. The American Dental Association, by the way, you would recognize them. That's the group that denied that putting mercury, one of the most toxic of all substances on planet Earth to living things, in the mouth, in the fillings of dental cavities, is not dangerous. Putting poison in your mouth is not dangerous. Mercury is used as a preservative in vaccines to increase the shelf life. Why? Because shelf life means profits. So now this poisoned with mercury solution is injected into infants, young children, and adults. There are all kinds of arguments raging around the world whether mercury in vaccines is responsible for the growing number of cases of autism, and that's going to continue to rage, and I'm going to step out of that. But if you look at it like this, there can't be any question that mercury is a deadly poison. Pretty much anybody who doesn't accept that is out of touch with reality. The second point is that injecting a deadly poison into an infant can't be a good thing. Now, if you're out of touch with that reality, that's scary too. Injecting a rock is not a good idea for the injectee. On the other hand, if you're the corporation that produces that rock, your profits are liable to rise because the thing that you produce will stay on the shelf for a very long time before it's injected into a person. The fact that it could do terrible things to a person, well, we're talking about profits, so let's not go into what it's doing to people. Much like my description of getting more information about the rock in the shoe to confirm that the symptoms are actually from the physical rock, that same approach regarding dental health and vaccines can work for us. I'd like to suggest a few places to look for more information. Here's a book titled Root Canal Cover-Up, written by a dentist, George E. Meinig. And Meinig is spelled M-E-I-N-I-G. M-E-I-N-I-G. George Meinig was a dentist who did lots and lots of root canals until somebody alerted him to the research that Dr. Weston Price had done, and he was horrified at what he had been doing. When he started to review that research, he was absolutely stunned, and he felt that in order to undo some of the damage he had done, he needed to write the book about root canal cover-up. You can also search for the North Carolina Institute of Technology. It sounds like a big organization, but actually it's more like a mom-and-pop operation. Some years back, one of my coaches sent me information about it, and I followed up with it. And this group is doing research and talking up the idea that they have shown, according to their own research and their own beliefs and to their own satisfaction, that root canals as a source of infection in the human body contribute to multiple diseases. Breast cancer, other forms of cancer, autoimmune diseases. And most people now, even though it was poo-pooed some years back, recognize the direct correlation between dental disease and coronary disease, tooth infection, heart disease. North Carolina Institute of Technology. Interestingly enough, regarding teeth, search on this phrase too. It's yet to really be popularized, but seems to have significance to me. Dental distress disorder. Dental distress disorder. About the malplacement of teeth that occurs and how it sets things off, a chain of events that can cause all kinds of problems in other systems of the body. Makes sense to me too. I've heard stories about people when they have braces, now this rearrangement chain affects their jaw, affects everything, affects bones in the skull, and now the whole system starts getting discombobulated. But it doesn't make any difference what I say. Research it, prove it to yourself, or according to your level of interest in it. So let's go back to the physical rock in the physical shoe. There are at least two major problems when that kind of condition exists. Number one, it hurts. Pain, like, if we could avoid it, we would take that route. But number two, it causes us to compensate. We compensate for the pain by changing the way we walk, the way we stand, the way we sit. And by making the shift from the bottom up, we start to misalign our hips and our spines. In the simplest terms, when we start to put stresses on the muscles and the bones in our skeleton that are out of balance, that are unnatural, we start to put, I'll say, scientifically, kinks in the hoses. Or we irritate the nerves. Those nerves supply the communications and instructions to the organs and the tissues of the body, telling them what to do, how to do it, you know, that kind of communication. And it's not that complicated to think that if the organs don't get the correct signals, their functioning can become compromised and problematic. All systems, not just the body, malfunction when the command signals are bad or interfered with. The body is no exception. There's a range of human postures that I suppose is considered normal and effective. I think of this posture as balanced, with no undue stress on the muscles, the bones, or the nerves. The muscles support the bones, and the bones support the muscles, and both of them work together for harmony so the joints work effectively. And it's easy to see that a balanced body, muscularly and skeletally, has greater mobility and flexibility. That's a good thing. So how do you know when something is out of balance? Well, pain and discomfort are good indicators. We can see these in a different light. Let me say this. A headache is not an aspirin or ibuprofen deficiency. A headache is a red light on the dashboard of your body that tells you something is out of balance. You have about three choices in this case. One, add something like a painkiller, and aspirin or ibuprofen in situations can be used. It's a temporary relief. It makes us not know that we're in pain. That could be a wonderful thing. Number two, we can remove something like a part of our body, and I say yikes to that. I wouldn't jump at that option. And number three, we can adjust our alignment. Adjust our alignment. That's a great phrase. Adjust our alignment. Here's the source of information that I use with respect to this idea of adjusting physical alignment. It's from a famous physical therapist named Pete Egoscue. His last name, Egoscue, is spelled E-G-O-S-C-U-E. E-G-O-S-C-U-E. And you can find him on the internet, egoscue.com. He's got stretches and other positions like that that you can do to relieve pain. You relieve pain because the body goes back into balance. So he's become famous for introducing a drug-free approach to relieving pain, and that is go back into muscular or skeletal alignment. We can release the constriction and limitation in our muscles and in the rest of our lives. Let me talk about one of the biggest rocks and the one that is almost invisible to everyone. Water. Water. Depending on our age, our gender, and our size, we're about 65 to 75 to 85% water. Some organs are more water than others, the brain being one of the highest concentrations of water in the human body. Is we overlook the fact that we are so much water and we treat it as if it's insignificant. When we are alkaline, a little to the right of balanced in terms of the acidic alkalinity scale, or pH, we are healthier. Most people don't know this. Most people don't pay attention to it. But it, in fact, is really the soil of our physicality. If the soil is alkaline, we behave differently than if the soil is acidic. There are people that say when the body is alkaline, growth processes are facilitated. There is a signal to the millions and millions of microorganisms that cooperate with our daily functions to grow and to maintain balance. But when the body goes from alkaline to acidic, it's a different signal. It is a signal to these microorganisms, instead of being the maintenance crew, change your role and become the demolition crew. Reduce this environment, this body, to its simplest form. In other words, decompose it. You go, whoa, wait a minute. Decomposition of the body, when does that occur? We think, generally speaking, after death, but it actually begins before death, and that's death is just the end point, physically, of that acidification. What turns the body into acidic environment? A lot of what we eat impacts that. What we drink impacts that. And importantly, how we feel impacts that. Negative emotions acidify the body. Just like red meat will acidify the body. Just like Coca-Cola will acidify the body. You go, One of the ways that I deal with this issue personally is I have a water system installed in my home that produces alkaline water at the touch of a button. It's IonWay's system that I find very valuable. The only water I drink is alkaline water because the signal I want to send to my body is grow, develop, care for, maintain, renovate. I believe we should be living at least 120 and healthy, which says I'm not interested in demolition anytime soon. I'm interested in construction, reconstruction, repair, renovation, and I want my immune system working fully. The alkalinity that I seek for my blood, for the fluids in my body, is a major step in this direction. Acidity is a devastating rock that is overlooked by most people. This can show up in a variety of illnesses, and so I recommend that as an approach. Alkalize your body. There's a book, Alkalize or Die, written by an expert in this field. So if you don't know anything about alkalinity and acidity and pH and so on, it's a good opportunity to expand your knowledge of this field, because we're only talking about 75 or so percent of your body, and perhaps 75% of your health, 75% of your success, 75% of your happiness. A worthy idea. To me, the keys to healing all these rocks are the same. A physical rock is a physical rock. We can hold it in our hands. An emotional rock isn't exactly like that. We hold it, but usually not in our hands. People most often hold emotional rocks in their gut, or stomach area, or in their heart, or in their chest area, or even in their jaw. You can see that when people are angry. You can see where in their neck and their shoulders. And I say the keys to healing all of these rocks are basically the same. Number one, get more information. Become more aware of the natures of the rock. Study it. Explore it a little bit. It's not scary. Just get a little bit more information, a little bit more information, a little bit more information, and go from there. Number two, remove it or adjust it. And often just the awareness of what that rock is will release the emotional rocks just because you are understanding what it is. Your relationship could change with it immediately. And if those things were causing you pain or upset, sometimes they just disappear right there. If acidity is the rock, adding alkalinity, alkaline water, changing your diet, becoming aware of it. Just that awareness creates such a sense of effectiveness, and that sense of increasing our effectiveness is very positive emotionally. It produces tremendous feelings, which, oh yeah, didn't I just say a little while ago, negative feelings produce acidity, positive feelings produce alkalinity. You can change the soil of your body by increasing your feelings of effectiveness, increasing your awareness, can do this. The healing spirit wants to flow to us and through us. We're in the ocean of it. We can open ourselves to it. We can let go. We can shift the rocks that are impeding our connection to it. and have the experiences we want in our lives. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. Father God, Mother God, Christ, the creator of and the connection to all that is, thank you very much for our blessings. Thank you for our increasing awareness. Thank you for helping us to understand that the rocks that we experience in our lives are tools that help us to move from place to place to onward in our journey of knowing and growing into our awareness of you. Help us to know we're blessed in all things through your design. Help us to make the choices of the highest vibration that connect us to your love and your joy and your peace. And help us to shine the light of those vibrations on our own paths and the paths of other people, family, friends. Thank you. It is so. Amen.